League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello. Before we start the show, we've got a very special announcement for you, don't we?
Do we?
We do. We are announcing the brand new SciGuys 2021 calendar.
What?
Very nice. They're available for pre-order now. There will be more information in the description, but just head to that link and get yourself one before they run out.
We have done an entire photo shoot, and we have photoshopped our faces onto famous scientists for each month of the year. So every month you get to flip over a new day. Oh, it's a new month. And I get to see, for example, Corey as, who's the first person in the calendar?
Nikola Tesla.
Nikola Tesla. And you don't get to see the rest of them unless you get a calendar.
There's also a lot more cool little Easter eggs in there, little bits of fun facts, enough to keep you going all the way through the year. So you definitely want to get your hands on one.
There is only a limited stock because this is the first time we've ever done this. So check the link in the description. Get yours quickly, just in time for Christmas.
What are we starting with this week, boys?
A wee review.
That's right.
God damn it.
Too slow, Luke. Slow every single time.
A wee review.
Wow. Sorry. Very good. Very good.
The delay. It's the internet delay.
So this one says, you're one step ahead of my lecturer. Ooh. And Luke is still one step behind. But it's only because of the internet delay, so I wouldn't worry.
A wee review.
Here he is.
So those first two were from last week, actually. Loved the podcast. Been listening for a few months now, and I've managed to listen to every one, sometimes a few times over. That's more than any of us, I think.
Yeah.
Currently studying forensics, and one of my chemistry lecturers does a molecule of the week. And just so happens that this week was penicillin. Now, that's after so listening cute. To the episode on Alexander Fleming, I was saying the facts before it came up on the slide. So thanks, guys, for the knowledge on life-saving bread, and thanks for making science enjoyable, even when uni sometimes isn't.
That's so exciting. That's and so actually, exciting. The person said that we're one step ahead of the lecturer. No, you're one step ahead of your lecturer. Well done.
Very good job. Shall we start there?
Let's start the show.
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jemp and Luke Cuthbert.
Hello!
Hey, hello!
This week, we'll be talking about and two rats.
And what? Two rats.
No, as in two. Not two. We'll talk two rats.
Oh, two rats. Yeah, directly two rats. At the rats.
Yes, at them. And they might talk back.
Might
So, we're going to be talking about rats today. What do you guys think we're going to be talking about? Any ideas? Any
testing?
Testing? Well, I guess we've already talked about rats a couple times. And both times have been awful, I think.
We've done some awful testing.
A little better?
A little better.
Okay.
A little better.
Are we talking about the ways in which they are similar to humans?
Well, we're going to briefly talk about that. So I'm going to be talking about something called Deep Squeak today, which
Deep
is...
Deep Squeak?
Yeah, which is a neural network sort of program that has been used to sort of decode the language of rats. Now, I say language. They're not speaking their own little language. They've just got some squeaks that we want to understand. So we've got this... someone has basically built this program, essentially, that can understand what the rats are saying.
So they've not got, like, nouns and verbs and stuff?
Well, I don't know. Just I think they've got nouns and verbs. No adverbs, though. That's a bit...
Okay.
That's a bit more complex.
Stripped it back. No adjectives.
Yeah, they just pulled it right back. Okay. No prepositions either, which is really weird. Yeah.
They can't ask questions either.
Well, it's because, you know, you go up at the end of a question. Rats are always just up there at that point.
Squeak!
So it's you can't... I'm not even going to continue with that.
No.
So shall we talk about maybe why we use rats in studying? Because we use rats a lot. Do you guys know maybe anything about that?
Well, do they have similar immune systems to us?
Well, that's kind of close. Yeah.
I thought genetically we were quite close. Okay, genetically we're quite close to a lot of stuff. But
yeah, well, yeah. Both of those actually. So rats are really great. We use them for lots of things, like I said, you know, sort of cardiovascular, so heart, basically, heart-based stuff, neural stuff, stuff to do with the brain, healing wounds, diabetes, transplants, behavioral studies even. So not just physical things, but rat behavior has been used to study, to sort of model human behavior. And even use them for sort of research with space, including like sort of motion sickness. And also drugs are used on rats a lot. That's why we've got the term lab rats. If you want to be a lab rat, you can join our Patreon. That's a tier over there. But yeah, so the reason that we use rats is because almost all disease-linked genes in humans have a counterpart in the rat. Now, that's not to say that every single gene that is linked to a disease is the exact same gene in rat. It's just that a lot of genes that have some, you know, sort of link to a disease that we've studied have got some kind of counterpart in rats that we can use to model. Now, bear in mind, it's not going to be exactly the same, but it is going to be kind of similar. Like, I read recently that I think male rats, I think it's tuberculosis or some they can't get, male rats can't get a disease that female rats can get. So it's not necessarily a one-to-one mapping. But rats are generally pretty good if you don't want to study on a human.
But they do work in similar ways, even if they're not the same. That's why they test on them.
Yeah, a lot of things. I mean, a lot of things you can map really similarly. Even in like mental health research, they use rats a lot. So with behavioral stuff, it's not they don't do the sort of higher level things that we'd expect of humans. Rats aren't that intelligent. They're quite intelligent, but they're not that intelligent. But sort of the more innate, deeper sort of behavioral aspects of rats can map quite well onto humans. So we've used them. We've used them for that. And like I said, we use them for sort of mental health research. Like I said, with my dissertation, I actually had to, if you might remember from previous episode. You might remember from previous episode, I spoke about my dissertation, which was actually about rats. Rats and humans and the sort of microbiome, all the bacteria that exist in their gut and how that affects mental health. Now, we did a lot of those studies on rats, which means not only do we have a model of the bacteria in the guts of the rat, but also mental health of rats. So we can sort of test rats for depression, which is quite interesting.
That's so cool.
Yes, Luke.
I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
How do rats live naturally in the wild? Is it similar to our sort of civilization building instinct?
No.
Obviously, like you wouldn't like study, say, the psychology of an animal, a mammal that sort of lives alone in a fairly solitary way, as a good analog for humans, because not many humans do that except for hermits.
Well, okay. So when I say, bear in mind, when I say sort of behavioral studies, this is sort of, this is much deeper than the sort of social connection things. It's more in the case of sort of, like how they deal with rewards and, all that sort of behavior, less sort of psychology and more behavioral studies, if that makes sense.
Right.
And depression is more, it's less, like, obviously depression has implications. Almost everything has implications for humans socially, but we strip it back and we can study the more sort of basic elements when it comes to rats. Mm. Yeah. So we, like I've said, we use rats to study lots of things. We use them to study drug abuse, depression, fear or anxiety, neurodegenerative diseases, aging, and reward processing, like I mentioned. Basically, when we study rats, what we've got right now are two kind of main ways of studying what they do. One of them is the one that you're probably more familiar with, that you'd assume, which is just looking at them and seeing what they're doing, because rats have got different sort of behaviors. And, you know, and they're quite social animals as well. Like, to answer your question from earlier, Luke, they are quite social animals. In the wild, they're sort of, they live in sort of small social groups, I guess, with like quite large territories. When you've got rats as pets, if you want to get rats as pets, which I would recommend, you really, really need to be careful, because you can't have one rat. You need to have multiple rats.
They get really lonely, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And it really affects their quality of life if they're alone. I mean, if I was to put you in a massive house and not let you meet anyone for your entire life, you'd probably be a bit sad, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Vsauce did a thing where he did it for three, he went in isolation for 3 days and he was like, losing it.
Well,
imagine your whole life.
Exactly. If you look at studies based on prisoners being put in solitary confinement, it messes you up.
Yeah.
And having a lone rat as a pet does that as well. Some people say, oh, but you can substitute it with lots of human interaction. But humans can't groom rats. They can't, you know, cuddle with them all the time when they want. Like,
that's true.
The three rats that I have, they are, even though they're brothers and sometimes they don't get on, you can almost always find one on top of the other, mm-hmm. just chilling out because yeah. they're like, as in, okay, sometimes oh. like that, Luke. Sometimes like
you
that.
You meant like humpy way.
Well, sometimes. But a lot of the time they just chill out and, you know, relax together. Like one's got their head on the other one's head sort of thing.
That's so yeah. nice.
Because they're very social animals. And a lot of rats are very like sort of cuddly with humans and they like to be tickled and things like that. So
tickled?
Yeah, they're a lot smarter than people give them credit for. They do laugh, yeah.
What?
So, it frequencies that we can't hear. Which we'll get to. So that's the second way. So the first way is obviously, the first way to study how rats are responding to stimuli and how they're doing, which obviously for mental health and behavioral mm-hmm. studies is very important. The first way to do that is to look at literally physically what they are doing,
right.
which is not necessarily the best because you have to infer a lot. So if a rat is going to a specific area of, say, the sort of cage that they're in, you can track that. Mm-hmm. If they're avoiding eating, if they're avoiding socializing, you can track all of those things. But as I said, rats kind of have almost a little language of their own in that they communicate with each other using squeaks, as you'd imagine. But a lot of them aren't audible by humans. So these are sort of ultrasonic vocalizations. Ultrasonic just meaning out with the human range of hearing. So that's generally above 20 kilohertz ish. Mm. Yeah. So if it's above that frequency, humans aren't really going to hear it. So
I've heard that about cats as well.
Yeah. So,
I don't know if you've researched cats, but I've heard that most cat noises are like out of the human range of hearing and usually for their mothers or like their fellow cats.
So,
but cats trained by humans to make lower sounds so that we can hear them.
So I didn't research this, but I do know this. Luckily, cat sounds, generally a lot of the sounds that cats make to other cats are out with the human range of hearing. Mm. But the reason that they make, they meow and make those noises around humans is because those are the noises they make as kittens to get their mother to sort of recognize them. Oh. You know, it's like a baby crying.
Yeah. So
when cats make those noises, it's because basically you treat them as babies for their entire lives. And they know, they know that that's what humans can hear.
Yeah.
If they don't get a response for anything else, they'll keep on making those sort of basically baby noises for the humans to understand them.
Yeah.
So that's the case with that. You don't really think of that. Human range of hearing is not the be all and end all. There are a lot of vocalizations that are just completely out with our range. And rats, you can hear rats squeak, but generally, like, I'll go into this in a more in depth in a little bit. But generally, if you hear a rat squeaking, it's not happy. Because their lower sounds are bad sounds for rats, generally.
Oh.
Yeah, so higher sounds, good sounds. Generally, lower sounds, bad sounds. Although, bear in mind, rats have personalities, and rats can be little babies. So just because you hear a rat squeak doesn't mean that it's hurt. It just means that it's sometimes squeaking.
Yeah.
Because they do that. So, like I said, you've got the higher frequency rate, the higher frequency sound and the lower frequency sounds. And this is something that I was reading this study in particular, which was really interesting, that said that actually, so this is kind of about the communication between rats. Mm. So the higher sounds, like I said, are probably better. They're generally happier sounds. The lower sounds are generally distress sounds. Mm. Now, you can use the lower sounds when you're being dominated by another rat and you lose. You know, if you're sort of interaction where one rat is dominating the other and the other rat's like, okay, I give up. I'm sorry. I'm dismissive. I'm submissive now. If you emit the sort of low frequency squeaks, the other rat is like, okay, cool. I'm going to stop my dominance over you and just be a little more chill because I won.
I win.
Yeah. And if you're scared, the other rats will be like, that rat is scared. I should also be scared. Higher frequency sounds, the rats are like, oh, things are good. Things are chill. So if you were to say, give rats a positive stimulus and negative stimulus and you measured how they reacted to that, and then give them a more neutral stimulus, you can actually affect their reaction slightly based on the sound that you play. If you play a positive, high-frequency sound, they'll sort of take that neutral stimulus in a similar way to they take a positive stimulus, and vice versa. If you give them a lower-frequency distress call from a rat, they'll take the neutral stimulus as a negative stimulus.
Right.
So what this basically means is that rats don't only give out sounds that are to sort of show how they're feeling or because they're feeling a certain way. That also has an effect on other rats and how they feel.
So this sounds like if we were to run an experiment where I was to test Corey and Jamp's reaction to a shocking photograph, and I tested their reaction to the shocking photograph just blank, blind, with no other stimulus before it. And then I tested your reaction to the photograph having just played you a sound of a human scream. And the expectation would be if you just heard a human scream and then I showed you this shocking thing, you would be more shocked by the photograph than you were before I primed you with a human scream.
So, Luke, you're actually talking, but something you'll probably be aware of. And I don't know. You weren't at uni for very long. Yeah, you might have studied this. I think this is called the Kuleshov effect.
The Kuleshov effect,
which is in. Do you want to go into that in film? It's a sort of visual thing.
Okay, so the Kuleshov effect is basically this effect of how we as humans decode imagery. We sort of infer meaning on things that isn't necessarily there. So there's this old film by a filmmaker, Kuleshov, where it's a shot of a man's face and then a shot of, say, some food, and then a shot of a man's face and I think a beautiful woman or something, and then a shot of a man's face and something else. And they were playing this to audiences, and audiences considered this actor to be an incredible actor. And what they didn't know was the face, the shot of the man's face every time was the same shot. Yeah. And they were inferring the meaning by the cuts being made by the editor. It was the same face every time. And they were like, wow, he really shows hunger there when he's shown the food, and he shows lustiness when he sees the beautiful woman, and it's not there at all.
It's fantastic. It really shows you how much power an editor has. You've got so much power, my friend, so much. So you can show a face, a completely neutral face, and then it's the same as with these rats, but the sounds, basically. You can show a neutral face and then another shot, and people will infer meaning based on both of those shots together. And that's basically an idea in film that is, this isn't super scientific, but this is something interesting, I think. This is the sort of idea of film, how two sort of pieces can come together to make something more than they mean individually. Mm. As in, you know, an individual shot, a cut can have a lot of power because you give it two images and people infer a meaning. Yeah. But so with these rats, basically, this sort of positive-negative influence thing, it just shows that vocalizations are not only to show emotion, but also can affect the sort of response of other rats. Mm. And I think another thing that we need to be really careful here is as well, is to not necessarily anthropomorphize the rats too much. I don't mean let's not make them into furries, which probably we shouldn't right now. But I mean, let's try not. We need to be careful to not apply too much human sort of emotion behavior onto these rats.
Yeah.
They've not got a whole language. They just have squeaks that mean different things, as far as we're aware right now.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So I actually have a special guest for us today. Yes.
Oh.
You may already see this in the title. I don't know. We don't know yet. But we've got a special guest coming in just to demonstrate some things for you.
Wow. Who's that?
I'm stalling. Can you tell I'm stalling?
I hope this doesn't break the lockdown rules.
Well, I think the lockdown rules are quite specific. And so we've basically sorted it on one technicality.
We managed to fudge it.
Whoa.
That is a very tiny guest.
So the technicality is, that humans aren't allowed, but rats are perfectly allowed. Hello, buddy. You okay? Good. So we've got
he's sticking his little nose through. Hello.
His name is Bean. Now we're going to have to be quite chill because obviously he's never been in this room before, but it's
okay.
Can
you please hold him up to the microphone so we can hear him squeak?
That's exactly what we've brought him in to do. Hello, buddy. You okay?
Oh,
do you want some chocolate, maybe?
Hello.
Let's give you some chocolate.
You're so cute.
Oh, my God. So here we go.
Oh.
There he is. And as you can see, him up against the mic. Oh, he doesn't want to be there. Okay. I want to hold him. So let's hold him up against the mic. Can you hear anything, guys?
No.
No. Well, that's exactly the point. Thank you very much, Bean.
Oh, that's the point.
So thank you very much to our guest. So what have we learned from that?
We couldn't hear the rat.
Yes. And now what I do have is from Deep Squeak, modified rat sounds that have been brought down into the human range of hearing. And the whole sort of point of this is basically to show you that listening to rats is quite difficult. So not only do you need systems to decode it, you also need to have the right equipment.
Yeah.
So initially, like I was saying, people basically just look at rat behavior. Now, if you want to listen to rats, That adds in a whole extra cost of one, you need to get very special rat microphones, and two, you can't hear it. So you need
rat microphones. I love that.
Rat microphones, yeah. So you got to get ultrasound microphones, which actually cost a lot of money. I've had a look at that.
Yeah.
And you know, those can set you back like £300 just for what looked like sort of lower end models. Let me try and find this.
Made by rats for rats.
We actually have an example of a rat recording using Deep Squeak right now. So this is a rat noise dropped, all like slowed down quite a bit to be within our range of hearing. And if you remember the like how Bean was looking, that was these were kind of the noises that he was making. This is what rats are hearing. So they're making these noises quite often to each other.
Wait, so like all the time? These are pretty consistent noises.
Yeah, not all the time.
Yeah, but a lot, because they seem silent a lot of the time.
They seem silent, but they're actually making noises a lot of the time. There goes some trillion chirping. They're actually making noises a lot of the time. So yeah, they're interacting with each other. They're making noises a lot. And this is a really sort of incredible untapped piece of data that we're just ignoring because we can't hear it, and it's so difficult and expensive to listen to. So I think that's enough of the rat noises.
Yeah. Let's get rid of that.
Maybe a little bit extra bringing our rat guest in, but I just wanted to show to everyone how much data we're actually missing by just plain not being able to hear it, even with very good quality microphones and ears that, you know, are probably better than most other ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of the range of human hearing, because it's out of our range of hearing, and we only hear them when they're really distressed. So to record ultrasound, you guys will probably know quite a bit about this. Mm. I mean, I'd assume you do sound. Mm. So
I don't record ultrasound very often.
No, probably not.
Usually. Not in a normal day's work.
But yeah, I mean, you understand what's outside of the sort of limits of what you normally record, I'd assume.
Yeah.
So I've got here ultrasound is above 20 kilohertz generally in terms of frequency, which means sounds that are higher sounding than 20 kilohertz. And most adults can't hear above 15 kilohertz generally. Obviously, your hearing gets worse as you age, so children are probably able to hear more high noises than adults, which is why you've got those really high-pitched tones that are played outside of sort of shops and things to stop the youths from loitering.
I've never seen that.
You'll have heard it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was very frustrating as a teenager, because it's a good way to get teenagers to leave without disrupting the adults.
Yeah.
So to even record lower ultrasounds, you need a recorder that can sample 96 kilohertz,
ooh,
supposedly. And most normal voice recorders have a maximum sampling rate of about 44 kilohertz, which allows recording of up to 22 kilohertz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I making sense?
Because you're making sense.
You understand what I'm saying probably more than I understand what I'm saying. But basically, my point here is that you need specialist equipment to record all of this. And that adds on to both the cost and the ease of analysis.
Yeah, it's probably very rare equipment to come by. Many instances you'd need it.
Yeah, exactly. Not
for a normal person.
Yeah, exactly. It's not super rare, but it's another expense when you could just be sort of looking at what the rats are doing. And on top of that, as I've said, generally, if you're not using this program or some other similar programs, there aren't very many. I'll go into them in a bit. Generally, just having the recorder and the microphone and all of that stuff, that's not enough, because then you've got however long hours of sounds of just rats making noises that you then need to categorize and decode, because there are individual sort of, let's say, syllables of rat noises that can mean different things. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that certain sort of, you know, we understand dog noises fairly well. So we know that growling means stay away from me. Some kinds of barking can mean distress. Whining can mean certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, dogs have different sounds for different things. And the same is true for rats, but there are a lot of different sort of syllables that groups of sounds that we found. And it's not very easy, it's not very practical for a human to sort of listen through all of these things. So that presents a kind of difficulty. But as I've said, there's a huge source of data here that could be so much more effective than just looking at rat behavior alone. Mm. And coupled with rat behavior can actually be very beneficial in showing a lot more data than we would have had previously. So that's where Deep Squeak comes in. Now, Deep Squeak is based on, I love the name, it's based on a neural network. So it's It's basically like a look, you know what a neural network is, don't you?
Yeah.
Do you want to give an explanation of a neural network?
So it's basically like a computational version of what our brains are doing, and you give basically an input source of data, like an image or a sound, and then you train it with by telling it what it should have come up with at the end of that data, and then it figures out in the middle how to make that decision. So, for example, if I were to give it 100 pictures, 50 of which had cars in them, and I didn't tell it where the cars were, but I told it which 50 had cars, it would need more than 50, actually. But if I gave it 5,000 or 10,000 and just told it which pictures had cars in, it would be able to figure out a model of looking for cars without me ever telling it what a car looked like or even coding anything to do with cars. It would just figure out the difference. Once you've got this, you can then give input images and it can then give you pictures of cars.
So this is the key point here, is what Luke just touched on, is the not having to program it, which is, by the way, a fantastic description. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the key point here for DeepSqueak is not needing to code it, because obviously if you were going to actually write the code for this sort of algorithm, let's say, you'd be there a long, long time, and you would need to basically categorize every sort of possibility.
So DeepSqueak helps us identify the different types of syllables.
Yeah.
And so group them together.
It can help us. It groups them together. It can basically decode and give you a model of kind of, I think I'll go into exactly how it works in a bit, but generally what they've done is, instead of coding this entire sort of algorithm to understand rat squeaks, they've essentially, really interestingly, converted the sounds into sonograms. So basically converted the sound into pictures, fed the pictures into this sort of program, and trained it that way. And actually, really, a really sort of like little aside here is, have you guys ever done that thing where I think you're on Google and it's reCAPTCHA, I think, and it says pick all of the squares that have got cars in.
You're training
a neural network there.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people don't realize, is that it's testing if you're a human, but also you're training Google's neural network algorithm.
Which is hilarious, because Google is then putting themselves in a position where they are giving themselves neural networks that can pass the test that they use to test if someone is human. So at some point, they're going to then have to make a new test, because they will have all of this. They will have this system that can pass the tests to show that they're human. Effectively.
So you're, by process of proving you're not a robot, you're creating a robot that can pass as a human.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Effectively.
Cool.
Yeah. It's very good. It's great. I mean, obviously with these reCAPTCHA things, there's more than just picking the right one. Actually, I think apparently Google will not release, by the way, how the reCAPTCHA works, for obvious reasons. If they say this is exactly how it works, well, someone's just going to go out and specifically set something to sort that. But apparently, there's a lot to do with what you're doing before you click. So I think apparently sort of what you're doing, like what sort of web pages you're on beforehand, slightly, how the mouse moves just before you click it. All of that sort of activity factors into it deciding whether or not you're human. So that's kind of a brief overview on neural networks. Think of them basically like computers that are mimicking brains in a way that makes it easier to teach them to do things.
And also the really key thing about neural networks is that you don't actually have to know what you're looking for. So, for example, the neural network can actually spot patterns that you didn't know were there, which is so important, because if you're trying to figure out a language and you know how the rat was behaving and you know what the sound is, but you don't know how on earth to figure out how the sound means the behavior, for example, the computer can spot patterns you might not even be aware of.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. And so DeepSqueak was basically created by the paper that this is that I'm basing this episode on was written by Kevin R. Coffey, Russell G. Marks, and John F. Neumeier. There we go. John F. Neumeier. Should have read that one beforehand. In fact, I did and just didn't read it out loud. So these three wrote the paper. I think Kevin is the or Mr. Coffee, or Dr. Coffee, rather, is Dr. Kevin R. Coffee.
Dr. Kevin R. Coffee.
Yes.
Right.
F-F-E-Y. Not double F-E-E. Yeah, so you can actually, it's free to use. It's free to download, Deep Squeak. It's on GitHub. We've got a link to that in the description if you want to, I don't know, decode some rat squeaks for yourself.
Yeah.
But, well, the only thing is I'm looking at it, and I think you have to have a thing called MATLAB, which is a paid piece of software to actually run it.
Well then,
I don't know, but MATLAB. it references MATLAB, which is not free.
To be honest, I didn't think it was super important to know how to run it, so I did skim that part of the paper. So you might be right.
Sorry, you can get a trial of MATLAB, so we can all go decode. As long as you've got a several hundred pounds worth of ultrasonic microphone and an audio recorder that records at 96,000 kilohertz, then you can get a free trial
of
MATLAB.
At which point, they'll probably just pay for MATLAB.
I was this close. I was like, ooh, ultrasonic microphone, could record the rats whenever I want. Probably best not to do that. Probably not a good business expense.
Maybe when the Patreon hits £1,000 a month.
Yeah, look, guys, okay, yeah. That's it. When our new goal for Patreon, right, is if we hit, say, 250 patrons, okay, we will buy that microphone. We will set up.
We have the rats.
Yeah, exactly. We will set up a recording station for the rats. And
you better believe he's telling the truth.
Can we do a fake episode where it's three rats on the table with the microphones and it's just squeaking for an hour?
And then we have to run the whole thing through MATLAB, and then we have to read out what the rats were saying.
We can put captions up. You can just write the episode, and we'll just put your episode in the captions, and all it is rat squeaking the whole time.
Oh my god, no, actually, that is so much better than the joke idea that I was coming up with. We can actually do it. Okay, genuinely, Patreon goal, 250 patrons. We're halfway there. When we hit 250 patrons, dear lord, I can't believe I'm promising this. When we hit 250 patrons, we will record a rat-only episode of Sci Guys.
We will not be involved. It'll just be rats.
We can build them a little Sci Guys studio.
We have to put them a little table with little microphone arms.
At this point, I'm really glad that I didn't live with you guys. You guys can build a little rat studio. I'm going to stay here.
Are you telling me you wouldn't want to build a little rat studio?
No, okay, I definitely would.
Yeah, there you go.
So bring on the end of lockdown so I can build a rat studio.
Genuinely, that's the next goal. 250 patrons, you get a rat-only episode of Sci Guys. So, that's how neural networks work. That's who kind of made Deep Squeak, Kevin Coffey et al, if you remember. Now, yeah, basically what this paper says, the sort of start of it, is just saying what I've said already, that decoding ultrasonic vocalizations, rat squeaks, and this also, bear in mind, what I'm saying for rats mostly applies to mice as well, but this is more specifically based on rats. So sort of investigating USVs is a long process. It's manual work, and so it's very difficult to get all of the sort of researchers to start doing that, because they're not going to want to do that because it doesn't make sense for them. So the goal of this is essentially to provide an easy way for researchers to use this source of data. Now, to then go on to talk about how deep learning and neural networks have really changed the way that we sort of interact with the world, because it's a fantastic new way to categorize things and find patterns and things like that, and hence Deep Squeak. That's where the name comes from, by the way. Deep learning, Deep Squeak. It's not the first, as I've said. There are other options for decoding USVs, but Deep Squeak is slightly different in that it's free. It's apparently accessible to use. From the description, it seems fairly easy to use. In fact, there are features. A lot of features that can be used without having any understanding of how neural networks work or any programming or coding knowledge at all. It's more accurate than other options, which I've had a look at in the paper. It looks like it from their own studies. Obviously, they may be biased, but it does seem to be more accurate than other sort of options. And it's got a lot of features for basically nothing. And I say basically nothing. It is literally free. It is free. So it comes with four default detection networks. So they've got one general purpose one for mouse USVs, one for short rat USVs, and then one for long rat USVs at 22 kilohertz.
What do you mean by, do you mean long rat as in just a long rat?
I was also confused.
The USVs are the squeaks, remember?
Ultrasonic vibrations?
No. Ultrasonic vocalizations.
Different types of squeaks, not different types of rats.
Yeah, different types of squeaks, yeah. These are all squeaks. not different
what
types
I
of
heard
rats.
Was short rat. USV. No. And long rat USV. Not long rat USV.
Rat USVs short, that are rat short. USV. The rat, the length of the rat, irrelevant. You can have any length of rat you want.
It can be a rat this long.
Yep. I don't know how, but it can be.
Somehow.
So yeah, the recordings are stored as WAV files. I've never had to say that out loud.
WAV.
Yeah, I've never had to say that out loud, not WAV. Once in my life. Or there are other files that you can store them as. And essentially, like I said, DeepSqueak will basically take those sound files, convert them into images. So they're sonograms. If you guys know what sonograms are, yeah?
I'm pretty sure I know what they look like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like kind of like, it looks like sound waves. It's like the up and down bits. Yeah, you guys. It's
frequency, volume, and time.
Yeah.
Basically a three-dimensional graph. For frequency, volume, and time.
Yeah, if you're not sure and you think you know what a sonogram looks like, you're probably thinking of a sonogram.
Yeah,
it's the visualization of sound, essentially. So I think that's a really brilliant thing as well. Taking the fact that we're converting auditory information, audio information, into visual information for these neural networks that are very good at understanding sort of images, which is. I just think a fantastic little leap in logic there, which is, you know, great. Obviously, it's probably been done a lot more times, but
yeah.
I just think it's very good. It shows why scientists are smart. So, the great thing about this is that it can be automated, but it can also do sort of more manual things with it. So you can build your own sort of, detection networks based on your own sort of data, and apply that to future ones. So it's really useful. They talk about in the paper about the keyboard shortcuts they've got, and you can redefine the boxes that that define calls. It seems like a more user friendly version of things of a few programs that already exist. Mm. And the key thing here, I think the most sort of incredible, the thing that sets DeepSqueak apart from others is the sort of noise and experimental conditions that it is able to sort of roll with. So these other systems that basically listen to rat squeaks and decode them, they're quite good, but when you introduce them to background noise or the noise that you hear in experimental conditions, so rats chewing, rats maybe moving around, lights going, all the sort of mechanical sounds, because bear in mind, just because you think a room is silent, it doesn't mean it is. Lights make noise.
Lots of noise we can't hear.
Yeah, electronics make noise. And there's a lot of different things that are going on that we really just can't hear. Mm. So obviously, if you're listening specifically to ultrasound, the ultrasound range, you're going to have a lot more noise pollution than you may expect. And that noise pollution can really mess with the other systems. So as in the other programs that are available. So what they actually did was they set out to, with DeepSqueak, make something that is very good at dealing with that sort of noise pollution.
Oh, so it can isolate rat noises apart from other noises in the same frequency range?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, so obviously the same, if it's exactly the same frequency, then it's
a bit harder.
Well, if it's the exact same frequency and the exact same length, then it's basically just the same sound.
Yeah.
But it's okay. So let's do an example here. I am a rat. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this, my voice is the rat noises, right? Mm-hmm. If you can hear this, you can hear all of this if you're listening. Mm-hmm. The system can essentially take out all of these other noises so that you're just hearing.
Wow.
Well, not just hearing, but you know what sounds are the rat sounds. Yeah. And you can do this sort of manually to improve it. And they did this thing where you sort of can sort of supervise a neural network and how it learns and be like, you got that right.
Supervise
it. You didn't get that right. You got better. Exactly. So they worked quite hard to make sure that it was precise and accurate, and what they did was they essentially just this is brilliant. They began with a recording from something called MouseTube. Didn't know it existed.
That's where we're going to upload the rat episode.
I think that's a bit of a faux pas though, because that's MouseTube. That's I don't know.
We're invading their space, and shoving some rats in their face.
Exactly. Mm. You know, that's a mouse-only space because, as we all know, mice are oppressed by rats. Move on. That's not a
tyrannical rule of rats.
MouseTube. I've just looked this up. This is a website with 1,585 different mouse vocalization files available now for you to download.
Yep. Scientists have a lot of... There is, you know, a whole part of the internet where scientists just upload things that you think are ridiculous, but obviously it makes sense that they're that they are available somewhere.
This website has 10 sponsors.
But it would, because it's very important to understand mouse vocalizations.
Can we be the 11th sponsor, please?
Sorry, guys.
When we hit 500 patrons.
We will become an official sponsor.
We will start
of
a
mouse
weekly
tube.
Rat podcast.
No.
And put it on MouseTube.
No, the rat podcast could have its own Patreon.
Okay.
Because we don't want to muddy the funds. You know, those rats work hard and it's not That's really true. Fair for...
We have to pay the rats equally.
A living wage.
A living wage.
I they mean, they survive. Only live...
Oh my gosh, the homepage of MouseTube has a Draw My Life.
Ah! No.
I'm not kidding. It has a Draw My Life.
Oh my lord.
Is there a cinnamon challenge?
Like how MouseTube started.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. So MouseTube, they got the vocalizations from MouseTube and then added more and more white noise to the recording. You guys know what white noise is, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. The constant hissing. It's always. It doesn't mean to be hissing. It's just constant noise. It's always in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
The natural noise from the room tone, the electronic noise, whatever.
Exactly. Let's all be very quiet. No, that white noise.
Actually,
noise is evident.
I take out the white noise every week. So,
you know, just keep it in this little section.
Okay.
Is that difficult? Don't do it. Don't worry.
I've just had an email come through from the MouseTube team. Welcome.
Hell yes.
Welcome to MouseTube. Hello, Sci Guys. Welcome. Your registration with MouseTube is completed. Perfect.
Amazing. What amazing bounds we've made today. Isn't that fantastic? Thank you to our lovely patrons over at patreon.com/SciGuys for allowing us to sign up for this free MouseTube account.
Oh, wait. Okay, there's a direct... Oh my gosh. I've just found the directory with the email and phone numbers of all the mouse experimenters on MouseTube. We could just call one of these guys and be like, you want to be a guest on our podcast?
Like, right, this very... No,
I was
going to
say, we just add them into the call. Be like, how you doing? Can you turn your camera on? And are you ready for a podcast?
That's so cruel. Okay, so we continue. So they got all the sounds from mousetube.com and they added more and more white noise to it. Now, that effectively replicates the effect of lowering the sort of ratio of sort of the signal to noise ratio, apparently. And it didn't really affect the precision of DeepSqueak or another sort of decoding program or categorization program. But a third one that they tested just wasn't able to detect any USVs once the noise was introduced, which just shows you that DeepSqueak is... That's what DeepSqueak does. That's
superior.
What DeepSqueak, yeah, that's what DeepSqueak's sort of USP is. The fact that it's sort of fully featured and it's very good at discerning USVs, little squeaks, from background noise, essentially.
I found all the mouse sounds.
Oh my lord. I just feel
like... I found them. And also, by the way, you know I mentioned that there's a directory of all these different mouse experimenters? Mm-hmm. We're now in the directory. Sci Guys Podcast is in there.
Oh no.
We're going to get ourselves banned from MouseTube.
This is so exciting. Right, here we go. You want to hear a mouse sound?
Let's go for it.
Yeah, you do. Okay, we've got a male interaction in a rectangle cage.
Oh. I've done that before.
These sound like porn categories. Yeah, I was going to say, these sound like porn categories.
Sorry,
oh no, MouseTube isn't a play on YouTube, it's a play on RedTube.
Oh,
dear me.
No.
Basically, the point of this is that DeepSqueak is quite good at dealing with background noise. And the whole sort of point of this episode is just to talk about how interesting this idea is that we're using sort of neural networks, new advances in computing essentially, to deal with problems that we didn't even realize were there. So for a long, long time, we've been studying rats and mice, and we have just been using visual cues. And now we have basically opened the door to their inner thoughts, one could say. And I just think that's really fantastic. So obviously, there are limitations to DeepSqueak, and it's not perfect, but it is a great step forward. And what we could be seeing in the next sort of few years is, what I say we could be seeing. You could be seeing this if you keep it, if you pay attention to papers that are being written.
Become a rat researcher.
Yeah, no, genuinely. If, I mean, and like this is something that you will probably notice if you pay attention to scientific papers that are coming out, that you may see more and more analysis using these kind of programs that decode squeaks, because basically the idea is to make it cheap, easily accessible, and accurate. You really want to get those, because obviously if it's accurate and easily accessible, great. You're not going to get the sign off to pay for it. If it's cheap and easily accessible, well, okay, cool. Not accurate, pointless. And all of that. So that is the goal, to make something that it can be used by almost anyone, that is cheap and is accurate. And then you can use it to supplement, and not necessarily replace, but also supplement the systems that we've got in place now for studying rat behavior, which in turn will then lead to probably better understanding of human behavior and interactions, you know, sort of drug interactions in humans and things like that, because we'll be able to actually more accurately study how rats are affected by certain things. And this is the thing. One big hurdle for studying these rat sounds, USVs, after sort of detecting them in the first place, because bear in mind, actually detecting the noises is something you could probably do quite easily as a person, because you can be like, oh, that sounds like a squeak. basically, oh, that sounds like a squeak.
Yeah.
The difficult thing here after detecting and getting rid of the background noise is categorizing them into what I was talking about before, the syllable types, and sort of figuring out what that means, because there is some kind of syntax to them, supposedly. Obviously, not in a language sense.
Not in like a sentence sense.
No, not in a sentence sense. But there is apparently...
Rats have grammar.
Rats don't say the rats have grammar.
Please rats have grammar.
No, don't say the rats. Because rats don't have... I don't know that rats don't have grammar, to be fair.
They could have
grammar. There is no evidence that rats have grammar, okay? I am fairly sure that they don't. With my sample size of 3, I can tell you that rats do not have grammar. In fact, I think if rats could speak English, they would speak English with awful grammar, because
probably
that's just their vibe, is it not?
Just single words at a time. Be it.
The only words they would say would be squeak. Just squeak. Squeak, squeak.
Squeak.
I am very worried.
That's when they're feeling safe. Squeak. Squeak. Oh, wait. No, yeah. Wait, it's worried. Is it worried low or?
So distress is down low and generally, bear in mind, generally. But then understanding rats can be difficult, because rats do this thing called boggling, where basically, so they've got this thing called bruxing, where they sort of rub their teeth together, because their teeth keep on growing and they've got to grind their teeth down. But they grind their teeth together and that can make a certain noise. That's called bruxing. But also, because of the way that their eyes are connected in their head, it kind of pops their eyes out when they sort of brux really hard. So their eyes sort of pop out a bit. And that's called boggling. Now, generally, rats do that when they're very happy. They can also do it when they're distressed as well. But generally, they do that when they're very happy.
Sorry, that's really funny.
I know, it's great. So if you start stroking a rat, you could probably see them their eyes start popping out quite a bit.
Boop.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
What?
Honestly, like the amount of things that rats do, absolutely fantastic. They're just very great animals. It's a shame that we have to use them for so much research, but hopefully someday,
one day,
we won't need to do as much.
Maybe our research will be complete forever.
Yes,
we'll finish it.
We'll close the book.
That's
on science
done.
Like one day,
no more need.
Like one day, we'll finish history. You know, we won't need to study any more history. It'll all be finished.
History class will end. There'll be no more history. Only the future.
Imagine trying to study geography when we discover more planets. Oh, that's just a pain, right? Because it's like studying geography beforehand, you know, back when we were still discovering sort of countries and land masses, that would have been a pain, because you're like, oh no, I thought there were only 2 continents, but now we've got America to deal with. And, you know, we're finished the age of discovery in that sense, but as soon as we start getting to other planets, it's like, oh, great.
Now I've got to think about Zeppelin 6.
What's the capital city of the capital country? Of
of the capital planet of the solar system. That's the capital solar system of this galaxy.
Gosh. Are you that stupid? There are only 6 known galaxies that have... Yeah, but...
You don't know your capital solar systems?
Yeah, at that point, Jog Guys, you know, our geography podcast that we keep on talking about...
And we can actually start it. It's something interesting.
Exactly. Something that we can understand because we're bad at geography. All of us, I think.
But for now, we're talking about rats.
Now rats.
Which are equally fun.
Yeah, which are, if not more fun. But that's the point. So, the difficulty here is sort of unraveling the syllable types. So, figuring out... where certain sounds start and end. Because if they're making... You heard earlier on, we've got that recording of the rat and the recording of the mice as well. They are making sounds quite often. So it's effectively trying to figure out where sentences start and end, if you think about it like that.
Right.
So I can say a sentence that is quite simply, I'm feeling happy.
Yeah.
I'm feeling sad.
Oh.
Now, the job here is to figure out, okay, well, where does each sort of sentence start and end? If you didn't understand what I was saying, where does each sentence start and end? And what is the meaning behind each of those individual sort of units, each individual sentence? And that's what they're essentially doing here with the rat squeak. They're trying to figure out, okay, where does one bit start and end? And what does that bit mean? And that is quite difficult. But there is software out there that is sort of working on that. And it is something that we are sort of making progress with. And it's basically where the future of this sort of technology is in trying to... sort of figure out these squeaks. I mean, one day we could even be fluent in rat Duolingo. You'll have a rat.
No.
Ratish on Duolingo.
I'm taking up rat.
Yeah, as soon as we are able to both speak and hear over 20 kilohertz, then we can start learning ratish on Duolingo.
You just got to slow it right down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But no, really. I mean, if you think about it, I think this is really interesting because it's one of those things that people generally wouldn't necessarily think about, but we almost sort of, we don't think about very much with dogs, that actually dogs have got not a language, certainly not a language. There's no evidence to support that, but they do have vocalizations and sounds that mean certain things.
Yeah. Patterns their vocalizations.
That we can understand.
Yeah.
And we can interact with them in that way, not only using their sort of physical shows of emotion, you know, with the tails and whatnot, but also with the sounds they make. And, you know, if you were to study dogs and not listen to the sounds that we're making, you'd think that's a bit mad, isn't it? Like, you get a lot of information, and we're not doing that for rats because we just can't hear it. So I think this is a really great step forward. That's something we'll probably start seeing more of in the future. I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Deep squeak. So that was it for you guys.
How did we discover that rats make high pitch noises in the first place?
Probably just assumed because they're little.
Maybe.
Like, genuinely, I mean, probably we probably just, because they're little, and we know that smaller things make higher pitch noises because that's how sound works.
Right.
And bigger things make lower pitch noises and we know the range of human hearing.
Yeah. Like,
there are noises that are made that are just outside of our range of hearing.
Yeah.
Quite low noises. So we probably just inferred from that.
Had a hunch.
Yeah, had a hunch.
And then checked.
All you need to do is just start recording the rats, slow it down, be like, look at that.
They're talking about us behind our backs.
No, it's very frustrating. Okay, right, here's the thing, right? Rats, their sounds that they make are outside of the range of human hearing.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be quiet.
It's basically like a walkie-talkie thing.
Yeah.
Except just for them.
But you think that would mean that they'd be quite quiet.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not. They're loud as all hell. They run around, they push things over. Rats are very loud. So
vocally loud, they'll make sure the environment is loud for you.
And that's another reason that you really need to work on the denoising, because they make a lot of noise. But that's that was Deep Squeak. That was just a little insight into why we use rats for testing. How we sort of infer, how we understand what effects our studies are having on the rats, and new ways that we might be able to understand rats. I mean, like I said, one day you might even be learning ratish in school. That was a joke. You won't be. I'm joking.
Never say never.
No, I would. No.
Never say never.
Okay.
But you I might can't have, say never. If we successfully figure out how they're speaking, you might have a device which, like a neural network that takes rat sounds, translates it into basic information, and then you can then type some basic information back, and the neural network translates it back into some rat sounds. That might happen one day.
I mean, You know, you could
plausible.
You could have that. This is the thing. You know, there's all these. There's you always hear about people being like, oh yeah, there's this technology to. We should make technology that can translate dogs, like the sounds that dogs make barking, into English and vice versa.
Oh, into like direct human speech.
Yeah, but like that way. But ultimately, like, do we need that? Because we understand dogs. We've been sort of evolving together for, I mean, I was going to say centuries, but.
Corey, I don't think you understand how capitalism works. It's nothing to do with whether we need things, whether someone will buy it.
That's very true. That's very true. So
loads of weird rich people will buy dog translating devices. But the fact absolutely.
They would just be screaming abstract concepts like biscuits.
Well, but the device would go like, yeah, yeah. But your device might translate it into like, your dog needs some water from like a bunch of disparate signals.
But then obviously that... A fair amount of that could probably be quite dependent on the dog. And my argument here is that when it comes to dogs, generally people understand what their dogs want. And cats
already,
as well.
Yeah,
people understand what their dogs and cats want because they know how to communicate. We know how, like, we have a pretty good way of communicating with each other. Generally, I think it's more difficult to understand what an unfamiliar dog is trying to tell you than a familiar dog, because you communicate together a lot. In the same way, I think, that parents with their own children are generally fairly good at understanding what their kids want based on their sort of the noises they make and the sort of gestures and things like that. More so than if I just see a random baby, I don't know what the baby wants. I don't know what it's doing.
What's your money?
You need a baby translation device.
Yes, it's called Aging.
Powered by MATLAB.
Actually, this is okay. Just one last thing to close us out, just because it's a little interesting fact, or a little fun thing to do. We're talking about slowing things down and lowering the pitch, because obviously that's what happens when you slow down a sound. You lower the pitch, make it sound lower. Babies, when they are crying, sound very, very specific. Getting the sound of being an adult that can make a baby cry noise is a very good talent. In fact, a lot of people, a very good talent. It's something that is not super easy. Not just anyone can do it. You can learn to do it, but obviously for TV and stuff, they record people doing that. But actually, if you slow down a baby crying, and just lower the pitch, it literally just sounds like an adult, like shouting and screaming. Literally like that. That is what it sounds like. And
weird.
I thought that was really surprising because. Thinking about it, you're like, well, actually, yes, that makes sense. They are just people with the same vocal structure.
But smaller,
so their noises will be higher.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect it to sound so similar to just an adult just making those noises.
I found a video called The Soothing Sound of 14 Pitched Down Baby Crying Noises.
Go for it. Play it. Honestly, play it. See? And like with a baby, it's like
that's terrifying.
That's like the noise they make. But then you'd lower it down to like your normal range. Right? Okay, right. For the people listening to this, I'm very sorry that you don't have the visual on top of that. But that's my point. That there are just these little sort of things about our world that obviously only us in this age of actually being able to manipulate sound are able to know that we don't necessarily think about. I just think that's interesting. But yeah, that was Deep Squeak, the machine learning algorithm used to decode the sounds of rats. So what did you guys think? Anything you want to add to that, maybe?
I'm just thinking, imagine if you slow down a rat squeak enough and it was just
squeak.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am Not Corey Everywhere.
I'm Champkin Everywhere.
I'm Luke Cupforth Everywhere.
You can find Bean at Scab Bean and Alfie on Instagram.
Aww, very nice. Thank you.
And before we go, don't forget.
Get the calendars. There is a link in the description for you to get your calendar.
Get it now.
Goodbye.
Not later.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.